Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am very good. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Also, my personal lyric database, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I'm well. I have to say the funny thing about that is just how many lyrics I've gotten wrong over the years too.
But you get them wrong with conviction.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this week, and it's Harry's, the awesome razor company. So that's really cool. We'll be talking about them soon. But first, Brian, you wrote a piece yesterday where you started diving into this whole thing where average users, like I'm assuming this means people outside of the technology echo chamber.
Yeah, I wouldn't say average so much as non-techies.
Okay. So, all right, fair enough. The non-techie people tend to really, really like Apple Watch.
Well, so... So this data came from a company called Wristly. They're an opt-in Apple Watch survey thing, and which is, you know, is a way of collecting data that has all sorts of various shortcomings. But the survey results that they released on Monday were dealing with Apple Watch satisfaction, which came in at 97%, either very satisfied or satisfied, somewhat satisfied, very satisfied or somewhat satisfied. Mm-hmm. And that is higher than initial iPhone and iPad numbers for the version 1.0 of both of those products. And also, of course, runs a little bit contrary to this notion that there's something wrong with the Apple Watch and that it's not particularly successful on an Apple scale.
You know, I'm finding this very interesting because I have a feeling a lot of the negativity we have been seeing towards Apple Watch as far as features and as far as estimated sales is limited to the echo chamber.
Actually, I would say that the data from Slice is not echo chamber. That's the data that we discussed a couple weeks ago now.
Oh, that's right. Slice. Okay, so for the most part, it's not echo chamber.
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I would actually say that my gut feeling is that the kind of people that would use Slice Intelligence's email services are very much not echo chamber people.
Okay.
I don't think a whole lot of technically savvy people are going to be interested in having someone mine their email inbox for marketing data. Could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think it depends on how they're approaching people.
Yeah, sure. That's true. Fair enough. Whereas, if anything, a lot of the people that are working here with Wristly may well be very echo chambery people. The people that dove into the Apple Watch obviously from the very beginning, because this thing hasn't been out for more than a few months. But they did do some metrics. They did a survey getting people to describe themselves within their currently their 1,100 users. And they found that 53% of those people describe themselves as non-tech users. You know, okay. Teachers, firemen, not app builders and not journalists and not, you know, PR people that work at Silicon Valley companies, et cetera.
So normal people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And when they broke down the numbers between the non-tech users and everybody else, the non-tech users like their Apple Watch even more. I think they were at 99% either somewhat satisfied or very satisfied. But more importantly, it's 73% were very satisfied versus 63% being very satisfied with Tech Insiders. App builders, only 43% were very satisfied.
Now, I'm wondering, does this have anything to do with the expectations that people that follow Apple products very closely had before Apple Watch was released? I mean, there were talk about all these features that we don't have. So some people went into Apple Watch with a preconceived notion of what they wanted, as opposed to what I'll say the non-tech public did, which is they went into Apple Watch, I'm assuming, knowing Apple just made a watch.
I think you're right, Jeff. I have noticed there are a lot of people who buy Apple products who don't necessarily become glued to their screens reading about all the things that are going on in the Apple world. They buy the products and they use them and they enjoy them. And they're remarkably ignorant of all the little details and the whining and the the tech echo chamber and everything about what's going on. And they just use their phones. I've met a lot of people like that and probably doing the same with their watch.
Sure. Yeah, I could totally see that. I look at my parents as a perfect example. My dad and Ellen, my mom both, they use their Apple products. And except for my dad completely screws something up. Sorry, Dad, it's just how you are. They absolutely love the products and they don't think about other features. It's just, here's this device that does what I want and it does it very well.
That's probably why they don't have unusual expectations about what the product should have. Because, of course, as Brian was saying, we read articles about how it's got to have this and it's got to have that. And when we don't get it, there's this unhappiness. And Apple just designs the product to do its thing. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that, as I mentioned last week in an article, it's a very finely crafted device. It's beautifully made, and you can enjoy wearing it. Half of the enjoyment of the watch is just having this beautiful technical instrument on your wrist. It doesn't, you don't have to worry too much about all the little details of how much RAM it has and whether it does this or that and missing features.
Sure.
Oh, go Philip ahead, Elmer, Philip Elmer DeWitt, when he wrote about this, he pointed out that Ben Bergeron, God, am I pronouncing his name right?
I say Bergeron. I'm going to have to talk to him on the phone sometime.
And I say Bergeron.
The three different ways.
Very smart guy, and I'm always interested in his insight. But he was digging into some of a little bit deeper into this report than I did, and his conclusion was that non-tech users tend to accept the device that's given to them and they use it, mm-hmm. and tech users tend to examine everything from every direction they can think of.
And they're always looking at the next step. What's the update?
Yeah.
What's coming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here, there's one more interesting. I thought this was really the most interesting thing about the report is that when Risley asked their respondents, so there's 1,100 people that are involved in their that have opted into to this survey platform. 800 of them responded to this particular survey, so which is a really, really high participation rate. And but when they broke down some individual things, such as opening a larger version of this image here, build quality, for instance. Okay, so they broke down six individual traits and asked people to what their satisfaction was on those particular traits. Not one of those came up to 97%. The highest was 95% with build quality and durability, and that was an 80% very satisfied and 15% somewhat satisfied. That's interesting. Aesthetics and design, 95%. That's a 74-21 breakdown. But if you get down to ease of use, now we dip down to 91%. Same with features and functionality, 91%. Help and support was 61%. And performance, particularly speed and battery life, was only 76%, with only 28% of those being very satisfied. And so here's the interesting thing about that. When asked as a whole, people were very satisfied, 97%. But not one trait measured up to that same 97%.
So, wow, that's really interesting. So I guess that means that in this case, the sum is greater than its individual components.
Well, how much of it is that people are very satisfied with the idea of the Apple Watch, but they're not satisfied with the specifics? And that, I mean, if anything, to me, this particular aspect of the survey sort of backs up the idea that the Apple Watch is missing killer functionality.
Well, it could be, Brian, that when people are highly satisfied without thinking about the details, they're reacting from an emotional standpoint.
Yes.
And that has to do with the design and the feel on the wrist and the look and the craftsmanship. And then when you start asking them about specific details, then they have to become more analytical, and then the emotion washes away and doesn't swamp out those individual numbers.
I would think that there has to be at least some of that at play. That was my gut feeling too, John.
And that would make sense. I mean, if you look at Apple Watch as just a complete package, it's really, really cool. But if you do go in and look at specific elements of Apple Watch, it's very easy to say, well, I wish it did this, or this isn't quite as good as it could be. So, yeah, that totally makes sense.
I had a car like that once. My wife was trying to convince me that I should buy a certain kind of sensible car, but I saw this red Eclipse on the parking lot back in the 90s, and I was in love with this Mitsubishi Eclipse with turbo and all-wheel drive, and I just said, I want it. And she said, but John, and I said, I just want it. And she said, but think about it. And I went, nope, I'm getting this car.
and she's still with you. See, yes. That just shows how tolerant some people can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor today. And that sponsor, I'm sure you picked up on this earlier, it's Harry's, the razor company. And Harry's, they are known for their incredibly high-quality razor blades that are substantially lower price than you're going to pay at a grocery store or drugstore. And I've been using their blades for quite a while now, and I've been very, very pleased with the quality. I love that I get a really good shave, and I am very picky about my shave. And I love that the blades hold up really well, because I've always been annoyed with traditional disposable blades where I pay so much money, like ungodly amounts of money, and then they just don't hold up, and I'm throwing them away so quickly, and I just feel like I'm throwing money away. But not with Harry's. I get these blades that they make themselves, so they have complete control over the quality, and I get a really, really nice shave. And really like that. So you should check them out. Go to their website, harrys.com. That's harrys.com. And pick out a starter kit. The one that I have is the Truman. And I really like it because it's a really nice handle. It comes with a few blades. It comes with a little protective cover case for the razor head when you're traveling. And then you can have your shaving cream, your shaving lotion. And it's all delivered to you in a really nice package. And you're not even going to pay shipping. So it's $15 to start. That's it. But if you use the discount code TDO, then you're going to get your starter kit for $10, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And when you go to reorder blades later on down the road, you're going to be very pleasantly surprised, because you're going to be paying it. I've actually looked in stores at some of the prices, and they're so high. You can buy a pack of Harry's blades, really good quality blades, for little more than you would pay for a single blade from another company. No kidding. They're just amazing products. So anyhow, go to their website, harrys.com. Use the discount code TDO. Get yourself the Truman Starter Kit. That's the one that I have. And get that for $10. Delivered to your door, no shipping charges. And start getting a better shave right away. Thank you, Harry's. Brian, you wrote another piece that that I wanted to look at today.
That's dangerous.
Yes, but you know me. You know how I roll. I am totally fine just rushing in where angels fear to tread.
Fair enough.
All right. So you found that Apple has a new person on board, most likely part of their still rumored car team. They hired a former executive from Chrysler.
Yeah, it was the journal that actually did the finding, the Wall Street Journal. Credit where credit's due. Doug Betts, who was he worked for the Fiat Chrysler Combine Corporation there, and he was in charge of global quality there. But he's got 20 years of manufacturing experience. So Apple has hired an auto executive whose gig is manufacturing.
All right. So Apple now has executives that are familiar with various parts of vehicle design. And now they have an executive who is familiar with the actual manufacturing process.
Yeah, it's that's interesting to me because it approach it more obliquely, to me, you don't start bringing on manufacturing people unless you're pretty serious about manufacturing something.
I think that seems like a pretty reasonable assumption. And this also tells me that Apple is most likely looking at how they can produce the car as opposed to coming up with the design and just simply outsourcing.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily at all, actually. My understanding is they're still talking to, golly, what's the name of that company, that that contract manufacturer?
Oh.
Magna.
I can't remember.
Magna Jarls. Magna.
Magna Jarls. Yes, that's it. Magna Jarls.
we can get the name here. We have this. Magna Steyr is the particular version.
Oh, right.
It's the particular version of that company. My understanding is they're still talking to those folks about actually building it for them. But you want to have you still want to have someone. I mean, okay. Tim Cook's claim to fame is supply chain management.
Yes.
So he, of all people, knows that whoever is going to end up overseeing their Apple car supply chain needs to be someone who understands automobile supply chains. And this is a different aspect of making a car than coming up with the operating system, coming up with stuff like, you know, whether or not it's going to be, well, we assume it's going to be electric, but whether or not it's going to be self-driving, that sort of stuff. That's one set of stuff. That is still going to all of that stuff is still going to need someone who understands how to make cars overseeing the making of the car.
And that's where Doug Betts comes in.
It seems like it would be. Now, his official title, his job is Operations Apple Incorporated. So, which is obviously very, very unspecific. And he's LinkedIn says he's in based in San Francisco. Started working there in June or July, I forget which. And that is thought to be where the car group is working, is out of San Francisco.
And that would make sense that that's where he would be, considering his background and considering what we think he has been hired to do.
Yeah, Apple is big and getting bigger. This is the thing. So Apple has to hire more people to oversee the things that it's doing, whether or not it's working on a car. So it is possible that Apple could be tapping the automobile industry for executives to cover other things, but come on. This guy's his job is going to be to help set up the processes and manufacturers who are going to end up making automobile parts, because a lot of those parts are going to be very different from Apple's usual electronics supply chain.
Yeah, which makes sense. It's a very different product. All right, so now with Doug Betts on board, do you think that let me rephrase how I want to ask that. With Doug Betts on board, Brian, what time frame do you think we are looking at before we will potentially see an Apple car on the roads?
You know, I don't know. So they've hired a fellow who is his claim to fame is autonomous vehicles, and I don't know. I want to say that Apple is going to that its first car is going to be an autonomous vehicle, but I don't have any evidence of that. I just want to say it. I want it to be the case, and I don't know, because the 2020 is the time frame we've heard, and I don't know that we're going to be ready for. I don't know that Apple or Google or anyone else is going to truly be able to have an autonomous car out on the roads in 2020.
I think you're right. I think it's premature. I think it'll definitely be an electric car, but down the road, pardon the pun, we'll see autonomous added on top.
What if Apple is looking at doing something where they have autonomous features like Volvo has, where the car can parallel park itself?
Yeah, lots of car companies are doing that, which is actually one of the things that that this person did. This person, what's his name? Autonomous, I got to find his name here. It's not Johan Youngworth, who is the guy from, that used to be the CEO of Mercedes-Benz R&D. It's not him. It's Paul Fergale or Fergali. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Let's go with Fergale. That sounds more fun.
One of the things he worked on was self-parking, and in addition to autonomous vehicles. So I don't know. I would think that if you want to ship something like a car in 2020, you probably want to start working on your supply chain now.
Sure, that makes sense.
I don't think
this is a complex, complex device.
Yeah, I don't think that Doug Betts' hiring indicates that Apple's going to be releasing this thing any earlier than we'd heard in the past. And that 2020 timeframe came from that controlled leak story that the Journal ran on Project Titan several months ago.
Brian, I was intrigued by your list of reasons why Apple might spend some money and then bow out. I thought that was an interesting list of four items there, especially the legislation aspect of it, limiting Apple's ability to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting list. I don't think that any of them are showstoppers, though, in my opinion. But it is an interesting and thoughtful list to consider.
Well, but we don't know, of course, what Apple might find. Why we don't know the reasons why Apple might find to kill this project. Thank you. I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Well, certainly we're in phase two of the rumor level, right? I mean, with all these hires, I mean, it's probably at least as certain as an iPad Pro, if not more so, because of the hiring.
Well, I would say that we are at 100% that Apple is working on a car. We're maybe 80% that Apple's going to ship a car.
Mm-hmm.
I think Apple is very, very interested in shipping a car, and that Apple is going to do everything it can to do so.
Well, you know, when I look at cars today, I kind of see them in the BlackBerry phase. You know, they have lots of buttons, and they're traditionally built, and they're comfortable with the way they do things. And I can imagine Apple can think of lots of cooler things, a way to operate a car and integrate the human being into the car. So I'm very enthusiastic and optimistic about this prospect. I hope Apple finds a way to make it happen.
I hope so, too. I'm really looking forward to getting to test drive an Apple car. And we're out of time. So, Brian, thank you for being here today.
Always.
And, John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And Harry's, thank you for being our sponsor this week. Head over to their website, please. Harry's.com. Use the discount code TDO. Get $5 off your first order, so you can get that starter kit for $10 instead of $15. Delivered to your door, no shipping charges. That discount code is TDO. Listeners, thank you for joining us again today. We will see everyone tomorrow.